And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Today's Friday, April 1st. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me today is my good friend Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I really feel like these discussions we're about to have the next couple of weeks is like I've been frozen in time for 4 months. And then finally you caught up and you're like unfreezing me, you know, like in a sci-fi movie where I'm traveling like
you're Han Solo. Like, we're getting you out of the kryptonite. Not kryptonite.
It was the carbon.
Carbonite. Yeah. My nerd car just lit on fire.
That was a shocking scene for me when I was 9 years old.
Oh, yeah. It's intense.
Oh, man. Yeah. One of my best memories ever with my dad is they re-released those in like 97, I think. And that's when George Lucas started tweaking it, like some of the edits. And at the time, I didn't know. And even my dad, after he saw Return of the Jedi, he's like, they changed shit. I was like, I didn't know my dad liked the Star Wars movies that much. But even at 8 years old,
My dad definitely did. So it was a very big part of my childhood. All right.
That's funny.
So what you're referring to is you have been deep in the draft takes for months with the work that you've been doing for Bleacher Report. I am coming very late to mine. So we're going to talk about the quarterbacks today. We pushed it back a little bit. And I do think that timeline is interesting, especially in regard to this position and the conversation we're having about it here in the lead up to the draft. And we're going to get into that. So we're going to talk about the top five guys today. You guys know who they are at this point, right? Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis, Desmond Ridder, Matt Corral, Sam Howell. Those are the guys that we're going to talk about today. The guys that, let's say, are in first round consideration. We're going to go through scouting reports, some of the things you could talk yourself into, some of the things that are drawbacks to each one of these guys. And we're just going to go through them one by one. But I wanted to start with kind of a broader conversation about this quarterback class, because the lifespan of a quarterback class narrative is always worth watching to me. So for the last year, right, since we had this conversation last year, because the way we see a specific quarterback class is informed by what the next one's going to look like, because you want to get yours in the right time. Same as next year. There are guys at the top of the draft that are going to be worth drafting. The whole conversation around this group was, it's not good. It's not a good group. There aren't that many high-end quarterback talents. This is what we were saying all fall, even as Kenny Pickett was playing pretty well. And then, for whatever reason, we seem to get collective amnesia as a football media the month or 6 weeks before the draft, as these guys inevitably get pushed up the draft. And this is a real phenomenon, not just in the way that we talk about it, but people within teams talk about this, how inevitably, because there's desperation and because there's scarcity, you're going to see these guys pushed up the draft and you're going to have rationalizations that don't seem to make a lot of sense. Because when I was watching all these guys, all five of these guys, if I were an NFL general manager, I don't think I would want to tie my future to any one of these five players. If I'm being honest, I just don't think I would want to in the first round.
I know. And that's exactly in the first round. That's exactly
round. That's the qualifier here.
Especially in the top half
of the first round. Especially. Yeah,
I always because there's a big difference between big board and mock drafts or just drafting is that
of course
guys get reached. Some positions drop back, positional value, all that fun stuff. And with quarterbacks, it's always that kind of half. I in my head, I always call it a half round inflation. If I have a guy, Mac Jones is a perfect. Yeah. Mac Jones is a perfect example for me. Last year, I had a late or early second round grade on him. I liked him, but I was like, if someone took him in like around pick 20, give or take a couple picks, that makes sense to me. That's a half round inflation, yada, yada, yada. That's kind of what happened. You got pick 15, I believe it was. These guys, even with a half round inflation about where I have them on my personal board, is still nowhere near the first round except for one guy, and we'll talk about him. But it's funny when we went to the combine and I got to talk to some guys with some teams and talk about who they liked at quarterback and just some thoughts, picking brains. And you can already see it happening where guys are starting to talk themselves into yep. some of these guys and talk, especially one of the players, Malik Willis, but really talking themselves into it and going, well, you know, if this hits, if this happens, and I'm like, God, in the back of my mind, I'm like, even guys in the league are doing this, not just media, but guys with
Willis
teams.
Especially though.
Yes.
When the coaches get involved.
Yes.
He is the exact type of guy that a coach is going to look at and their eyes are going to light up. They're going to get yep. so big because yep. you see the wow physical traits. It's like, ooh, I can work with this. And the yep. coaches I talked to, shockingly, liked Malik Willis.
Yep.
A couple different offensive play callers at the combine. That was one of the names they mentioned to me. I was like, all right.
I know.
I at that point, I have nothing to say because I yeah. haven't watched them and now I have and I understand it. But I think that you're really trying to see something when yeah. you're having that conversation about Malik Willis.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Mac Jones. I like Mac Jones better than all these guys. Like, I think a lot better than all these guys. Remember we had the conversation about Mac Jones last year when we were doing this show? And my takeaway after I watched him was I was more impressed than I thought I was going to be.
Yep.
You know, he played on time and I was just like, man, I kind of like him more than I expected to. I didn't have that experience with any of these guys, without not a single one. There are moments and there are certain details about each guy that's like, okay, that works for me. But not, as a total takeaway, not a single one of them was like, oh, that's better than I thought it was going to be.
That's funny. No, there's one guy I have above Jones, but other than that, that's it. There, this guy I would have considered, it's Ritter, by the way, spoilers, but it's, you know, I would have had him in between Zach Wilson and Mac Jones. Like that's if, even on just the scale I did for Bleacher Report as well, that's how it shook out anyways. But that's the thing is that's more about some of the potential tools that Ritter is working with. It's not that I'm the high guy amongst a lot of people with Ritter. And that's the thing, watching Mac Jones last year, I agree. It was like, oh, wow, this guy operates so well. And I kept comparing him to Chad Pennington, which I feel even better about watching him as a rookie, is that watching this guy, so accurate. Everything, it was an RPO system. But the thing was, his eyes were perfect every single snap.
Always going to the right place. Always.
Every single time.
And those are the things that's like, all right, I can talk myself into this. I just did not have that experience.
Yeah. You can see his floor. His floor was so much better than all these guys. Maybe.
I totally agree with that.
Yes.
So let's start with Desmond Ridder, who is your guy in this group. First question. On Good Morning Football today, they asked him if he could hear any song by anyone, what would it be? And he said Complicated by Avril Lavigne. Does this change how you view him at all as a prospect?
I still love him.
Okay, all right. I wanted to give you an out here.
I love. He was comfortable with himself to give that answer. I like that. At least he's not like every other guy that says some Drake song or something. Like, you know, at least he has something unique, a little bit of personality.
I'm totally fine with it. What is your most embarrassing, the most embarrassing song that if it came on, you'd be excited?
1,000 Miles, Vanessa Carlton.
That's a great answer and a great song because if that came on, I would be excited. I have some deeply uncool opinions about like 2012 EDM bangers like from my past. So I have some, there are definitely some in my repertoire. So that's why I can't judge it too hard.
Like anything like that?
I mean,
like
I definitely attended some Skrillex concerts in 2011. Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. So yeah, I mean, there's some skeletons in that closet. So I cannot judge him too hard. When I started watching Desmond Ridder, I started laughing to myself knowing how much you love him because you're a parody of yourself at this point. Like, he is the exact type of quarterback that you would love. And it was apparent to me so quickly. So the first thing we're going to do with all of these guys, I want to hear your scouting report. If you were writing this guy up as a scout, what would it look like? So walk me through what your write-up of Desmond Ridder would look like.
Yeah, I think this is what Desmond Ridder, because when you watch him, you appreciate him more when you watch him on film. And not to sound like a snob or anything, TV copy to film is so different for a lot of these positions, but especially quarterback. Once you get that end zone copy, you can see their eyes. And why I say that is that's how Ridder is. He is the comedian's comedian of quarterbacks. Like, he is the quarterback's quarterback, kind of like just how his polish is. That would be the first thing I would say about him is his polish in the pocket and as an operator of a real drop back passing game, a real offense. That's what he operated at Cincinnati. And so my first things that would, like, if I'm even just looking at my report right now, is just first you see the good height, you see his great straight line running ability. He's not very shifty, but straight line. He's a legit. He looked like a 4 or 5 guy on film, and that's what he ran at the combine. So that kind of like went hand in hand, which was good.
He's a smooth mover for sure.
And he can pull the Notre Dame game. All of a sudden, he's pulling away from guys, but also just a competitive and tough player. He's not afraid of the big moments. He got better as games went along and as the season went along. And that was one of the things that really appealed to me as I watched him, consistently able to progress through a range of concepts that they ran. They ran real. If you watch the Rams third down offense that Matt Stafford was in with all this empty stuff, Cincinnati ran some of those concepts. And those are with backside digs over routes where he has to actually progress between the hashes, and he does it consistently. It's not just like, oh, that was good one time throughout the whole season. He's hitting backside digs time after time after time, which is good. I say he has good arm strength. I think he can drive the ball. He's a line drive thrower, but the thing is, when he throws a deep ball, he flashes it, but he can baby it a little bit. He seems to be a bit of an overthinker, where he's like, I gotta throw this perfectly in there, and then the ball dies on him a little bit.
A lot of the time when he was throwing like slot fades down near the goal line, like in the high red zone, he left several of those short that I was watching because he babies them a little bit. Those are the ones I was like, I want more out of those.
Yep.
Like he's underthrowing those consistently.
Yeah, and when he's loose and in rhythm, all of a sudden he'll rip a 65-yard, like in the first game, I think it was against Miami of Ohio, he has a beautiful post, and it's right in rhythm. And then so it's like, okay, you have that in you, but I think that's what he is. He's so tightly wound in a good and bad way. And that I like my psycho robots. Like at quarterback, that's what he is. He's a psycho robot. That's the type of guy I like. And you're right, I am a caricature of myself because he has, at least what I've seen from interviews, what I've seen just like, even when he's mic'd up, I've seen some clips of him. He's a really psycho competitive player in a good way, in that he wants to get better, that he wants to win. He might not show that all the time in an interview, but he has like a lot of similarities to Dak as far as mentally, as far as competitor. And I like that. I like that a lot. If I'm going negatives with him, this would be the big thing.
Let's talk about some of the processing stuff, because I saw similar things, and I'll compare him to another guy that I think that if we're talking about people that have had to read stuff out and throw the ball over the middle of the field, Pickett does a lot of that too. But it's what's different with me with Ridder is that this is just anecdotal, but it seems like a lot of like 2x2 looks, he's reading out 2-man concepts,
mm-hmm.
and he's just doing it very quickly in a way that Dak would, where mm-hmm. it's a lot of like, all right, like hitches and things like that, where it's like, okay, he's making the right choices with that. And that happens all the time. And I think that's what was really impressive to me. And then the psycho robot thing, it's very funny that you mentioned like robotic and mechanics, because one of the things that jumped out to me, the first game I watched him play was against SMU. And mm-hmm. the first touchdown he throws, it's play action. And the way he flips his hips back and gets that throw on the guy, it looks like it's just very good. It's very efficient movements.
Yes.
When he's doing that. And you see that stuff all the time. So
yep.
those like, it's not mechanical in a bad way. It's almost mechanical in a good way, the way he's playing the position. That jumped out to me too. So I totally understand why you're saying that.
Yeah, his pocket movements is where it shows up. And that's why when I first started watching him, I was like, oh, I didn't know you had this shit to you. Like, I was like watching him from the end zone and how Cincinnati's O-line was not good. It was a very good team, obviously, with the record and what they did. But the offensive line was not good. So there's a lot of times he would have to step backwards in the pocket, backwards being to his left. And he would stay balanced and stay in rhythm. And it was like good, like especially for a college player. And that was really cool to see, because I finally have been able to glance at him earlier in his career, especially in 2020, and he's improved. And that's where I think he's a competitive guy. He's been well coached, but he takes the coaching, because all that pocket movement stuff is drill work. You do that every day as a quarterback. Most guys, though, as soon as bullets start flying, those feet get all over the place. Ask Baker. Ask Baker Mayfield. But with Ridder, he tries to stay balanced. He's trying to always do the right thing, sometimes to a fault. And that's where a lot of some of the Dak similarities can come, where you're like, just scramble. Just be an athlete. Like, you don't have to be a killer from the pocket on every play. But I just really do like that he is a – also, another thing is he's a big game hunter, like, which I'm always going to be a sucker for. He's going to push the ball when he's a calculated kind of risk taker.
Yep.
He's like, oh, I can, this is the time that safety came down, I'm throwing the post. Hey, okay, they moved over, I'm throwing the dig. I'm not checking it down, but he can get to the check down. So those are the things I really like about this guy. And that's why I'm a fan of him, that amongst all these quarterbacks.
They have two plays that seem to play off each other as compliments, where it's like a 2x2 set. And on the right, both guys will run hitches, and then both guys will run hitch and goes. And like, so, and he hit the hitch and go for a touchdown in one of the games I was watching. I was like, okay, like I could get into some of this stuff. Yeah. The leaving some of those short, he's a little slight. I mean, there are things to worry about, but I understand why you like him.
Yeah. The slighter frame is one of my big caveats with him, is one of my negatives. I skinny guys, luckily he's a good athlete, but I always get a little worried with guys under 210. Doesn't matter what their height is. Doesn't matter what it is. I just do. It's unless you're a freak athlete, like a Lamar or a Vic, just not a lot of success rate with those. Because of one, durability, which he's never had issues with, but also just getting pulled down the pocket.
Yeah, shaking guys off in the pocket. I mean, yep, that's really a huge thing that we've seen recently, right?
Yep.
Even with Burrow, who's bigger than you think he is, it just, the ability to take that shot and extend a play, it's really important right now.
It really is. And the other thing is he does, and this is, it's gotten overblown, but I do have to bring it up, is that he does have some accuracy issues that he sprays the ball. My theory, this goes with the psycho robot, is that he's too amped up at the beginning of games and that he is just like, oh my God, I gotta throw this. And the Notre Dame game is the perfect synopsis of this, is that he's, oh my God, I'm just amped up. Big game. And then you see him throw that first ball and it goes 10 yards over the guy's head. And it's like, Jesus, Desmond, chill out. Like, really calm down. Another guy that had this issue that I've been around was Derek Carr. When he was a young player, as a first year, second year guy, was he would get too amped up for games. And then his first couple of throws would be sprays. And then you calm down as the game went along. Usually once you get hit once or twice, it calms you down. You're like, okay, all right, I'm back to even right now. So I do think that was something you do have to mention, but I don't think it is as crazy. I don't think his accuracy is bad. People are saying that, like, acting like he can't hit the broadside of the barn. And I actually think he has pretty good accuracy because he actually can throw guys open into tight spaces. So I just do have to mention it though, because he does have some bad spray.
Every once in a while, it sneaks up on you. Yep. It's not consistent, but every once in a while, it's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
it's like, oh, man.
And he's a line drive thrower, so it goes worse. Like, because it doesn't arc and a guy can maybe catch it. It goes, I'm not putting him on this scale, but it's like when Herbert misses and it's like, what the fuck was that? that it's like a lesser version of that, but maybe happens a little more often than Herbert.
All right, so one thing I wanted to do with all these guys, because it's going to be a necessary process for teams, because these are all borderline prospects. Why would a team talk themselves into Desmond Ridder in the first round?
It's day one, he can step in and start for you. Just mentally, the polish he's shown, especially his senior year, I think some teams that will, you know, tantalize some teams going like, man, this guy can handle an NFL offense. He's not going to go in. He's huddled, which is a big thing. People don't realize what a growing pain that could be was for some quarterbacks to get the play call. That's doesn't even have to be a long play call, but just getting it and regurgitating in the huddle, breaking the huddle, walking up to the line and doing all that. He can handle that. Quarterbacks are getting better at it, but that's still an adjustment for a lot of guys.
And checks at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's doing actual work at the line of scrimmage. And when you compare that to some of the other look to the sideline, look back offenses, so many that we see, I mean, it's striking. Real. And as someone who doesn't watch a ton of college football, when you watch these five guys, especially in succession, and how different it is.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes.
How different the offenses are, the structure of them, and what those guys are asked to do. And he's doing a lot before the snap at the line of scrimmage, adjusting protections, just doing a lot of details that other people aren't necessarily asked to do at the college level.
Absolutely. Early in the year, the Indiana game is a really good one, but every week he did it. He would tell Jerome Ford, the running back, who I also like, but he would tell him, point out and go, hey, that's your guy. He would communicate to the center. He does that game after game. So it wasn't just like a one. Sometimes you see it, especially early in the year, when these college coaches get so excited. They're like, oh, we got this fifth-year senior quarterback. Okay, we're going to give him a whole bunch. And they do it for one game against freaking, you know, Southeast Missouri, and then you never see it again once conference play starts. Desmond Ridder was doing that week in, week out. And, like, on tough plays, too. The Indiana one's the best one because he's, like, sliding the protection into a corner blitz and then hitting the whole shot right behind it. So he has that advanced level to his game that's surprising, that because when I first got introduced to him in September, when I first started watching him, I was told, oh, he's just an athlete, he's just a scrambler. And I watched him and I was like, this guy has a lot more to him than just that, and it improved throughout the year. That's why it's really cool. It really is. When, like you said, when you start watching some of these guys, you're like, RPO,
it's crazy.
RPO, bootleg, sprint out, RPO, and then all of a sudden you see a 7-step drop back concept with a backside dig. You're like, all right, there we go, this is some real quarterback play happening right now.
Yeah, there's several of those plays where it's just, he's like it's a hitch and a little bender, and he's reading it out perfectly, and just like he understands, like, all right, this against quarters, this is the side I need to go to.
Yep.
And just it's a lot different. It's just a lot different than what you see from some of these other guys. All right.
Absolutely.
With each of these guys, at the tone of these conversations is going to be a lot of negatives. So I want to do the best case scenario. The best case scenario in the NFL for Desmond Ridder is what?
Oh man, it's like a blend of Ryan Tannehill and Dak. Like, just it's Ryan Tannehill's straight line athleticism and arm strength with Dak's headiness and competitiveness. I think that's a
pretty good quarterback.
It's a real good quarterback. I really like to look at all prospects as I've stole this from a basketball advanced stats. I mentioned this last year, but star, starter, bench or bust. Like, just really, what percentage do I think this guy could be a star? I think Ridder, it's like 5% if I'm just making up a number. But I think he has the largest threshold or largest chunk to be a starter. And I think
it's a great way to look at it.
And maybe his upside, maybe he hits that 1 out of 20 shots. But I really do think he could be a tangibly above average quarterback more often than not. If we're doing this in a multiverse, like, I think that is that he can be a starter more often than that. I think that's above average starter is his most likely path, which is a little bit of upside that if he continues to work on his consistency
and puts on like 18 pounds
and puts on about 10 pounds, starts squatting a little bit more. But if he keeps growing,
that sack fumble at the end of Notre Dame game, he just gets thrown in the air.
Ragdolled.
Like, in my notes, it literally says, my guy is very slight. Like, he is not a big guy.
I know. We got to get him a peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at midnight, like what I did my freshman year of college. But I really do think it's that he has a likelihood of above average starter with a little bit of upside that if he keeps growing as he did his senior year, that's like there might be more to him. And I just really like his competitiveness and it's just professionalism. I think that's a good way to put it. Right off the bat, he's going to step in and you're comfortable with him as your starter because I think he's going to be a good leader at the next level.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, let's get to our next guy. Let's do Kenny Pickett. You're writing Kenny Pickett up. What does your scouting report on Kenny Pickett look like?
Like, a kind of a baller, like, as far as, like, he is just not baller in, he's the best player ever, but more of, like, he's a Kenny Ballgame. Like, that's my nickname for him. He's Kenny Ballgame. Like, he has not just with the two gloves, but just he runs around, makes some plays. I'm going to get more detailed, but I really think Kenny Pickett plays how people wanted Johnny Football to play. Like, just like run around, throw some balls open, run around, scramble around a little bit. But he's good height. He's a good, solid overall athlete. Has enough size and play strength. Got some bulk to him to take some hits because he needs to. I would say he has a above average arm strength. I actually think Ridder's arm is a little better, which I
really
I
disagree with you about
when
that.
When he drives, I don't know. I think his arm strength's been a little overrated.
I don't think it's great, but I do think he has enough arm. Some of the outs to the field that I saw him throw and some of the deeper comebacks that I saw Pickett throw, it doesn't wow you, but I think he has more than enough arm. I think Ridder's arm leaves me wanting more. Mm-hmm. More often than Pickett's arm does.
I get you. No, I'm not saying it's bad or anything. Like, he has an NFL arm, like plenty enough arm. It's not where it's like, oh boy, you better be right every single time because that thing's floating on you. But I don't know. I when I watched them, and just like watching the similar throws that they make, it was like, I think they're very comparable for a lot of glances. Maybe those are the routes. I think he is accurate, that's how he wins. It's good accuracy and creating plays. That is how he wins, and that's where the Burrow comparisons come from. Is he scrambles around, can make some plays, and he operates when he's operating on time. He can throw some BBs in there.
I think the Burrow stuff is really misguided.
Thank you. I'm going to get to it in a sec.
Yeah. I think it's really misguided because we can talk.
If you want to talk about Joe Burrow,
the best part of Joe Burrow's game is the way he navigates the pocket.
Yes.
The way that Joe Burrow navigates the pocket and his awareness within the pocket, to me, physically, is the best part of what Joe Burrow does as a quarterback.
Yep.
When I watch Kenny Pickett play, I don't see any of that. I don't think he has much awareness in the pocket. He is bailing out. He's taking sacks. That, to me, is a weird comparison.
I just don't understand it. My comparison, I've already texted you this, my comparison for him was Taylor Heinicke.
He is more physically talented than Taylor Heinicke is. But you said that to me before I had started really watching. And now that I watch it, that is mean to Kenny Pickett, is that comparison.
I want to temper expectations for this because I was seeing the Joe Burrow comparisons and I was like, man, I thought Pickett would be such a better operator from the pocket. I thought he was going to be this guy, you know, 1-2-3, boom, hits the backside. 1-2, check it down. Like, just really quick. He's the opposite.
He's very skittish.
He's one and done. He is one, and he hopes something comes into his vision, and then he scrambles. So that was really disappointing to me because he'll take unnecessary sacks because he looks to scramble. He'll sometimes just he predetermines a lot of reads. He'll go, okay, one, done. He doesn't really look at coverages. He just goes, who's open or at throw. He does, you know, his ability to create, and we talked about this, get a bucket, is appealing. That, like, yes, he can scramble. He's really good at throwing off platform, but you got to operate from the pocket, especially how he's built, how he has to play. He has to show more in that regard. So that was really what he had. Inconsistent timing. His footwork would get all skittish, is a great word, chaotic.
When I heard that his offensive line was bad for a couple of years and that he took a lot of hits, it makes total sense to me watching him play this year.
Yeah. Yes. Because he's
you can see it. You can see some of the scarring.
Yeah. Scarring. It's one Mississippi, two Mississippi. He's like, I got to get rid of the ball. I can't handle this. And so it's just one of those. I just don't think he's as this polished, complete player that others were making him out to be. But he does enough in creation ability and accuracy that it's like, okay, that's how he wins. It's just creation and accuracy.
So when I the first game I watched of his was the Clemson game from this year.
Okay.
And I was out. I was like, I don't understand
that
this
was rough.
At all.
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked at how bad it was. I was like, I do not understand how people think he's the best quarterback in this class. And then I watched a couple more games and I watched the ACC championship game.
Yes.
Like, okay. I now totally get it. Yep. Because where he looks really good, he's a really good thrower of the football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when he picks a guy and he's accurate, he's got a decent arm. A lot of the throws that to me were the most impressive, some of the deep comebacks that he hit, I was impressed by. And against Wake, he hit several of those kind of lazy inbreakers over the middle to the single split out X. And those throws, when he's on time, those look good. He puts the ball where he wants to. To me, I'm curious what you think about this. I brought this up to our friend Seth Galina today. So that both Pickett and Ritter, if you look at their heat maps and just the way that they play the position, it's less of a Mickey Mouse offense than some of these other guys. They're actually asked to do some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a lot of the middle of the field throws that Pickett was hitting to me were to that single receiver side where he doesn't have to read anything out. Like, that is the throw he's making based on a pre-snap look, where Ritter is actually reading out two-man concepts. Would you say that's fair?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I
was seeing that consistently.
And if you notice how Pitt did it, well, meanwhile, this also, you have to mention this, is that receiver that they're singling up won the Blitnikoff Award as the best receiver in the country.
See, he's this just is the shit I don't know.
so there was a reason they were singling him up.
That's really
so
funny.
What Pitt would do, and his offense coordinator was Mark Whipple, who has NFL experience. And what they would do is, say they're on the right hash, they would run trips into the boundary. So they have three receivers, and then
did it against Wake like 10 times.
Against every – oh, it was awesome. Sometimes when you could tell, they're like, we don't have a play, just spam this. Which is ISO up our – the guy's name is Jordan Addison. He's a stud. And it's like, let's just single him up as the X, go. ISO routes, glances.
And they would just run the running back into the flat to pull the flat defender there, and they would just have that.
It was one-on-one.
It was just a simple, very easy decision-making for the quarterback. And when that's happening – and when he's allowed to be pointed in that direction, it looks really good.
Pointed so in I can that understand, direction, right?
But that's the thing. If you're and we can talk about this, how a team would talk themselves into him. If you can point him in the right direction, he's 6'3", 215, 220. He's got enough arm.
Run around
he's
a
accurate.
Little bit.
I completely understand how you can make an argument that he is the best quarterback among this group in those favorable circumstances.
Yes, yes. And but the other thing you have to mention, he's going to be 24 as a rookie.
Yeah, listen, and there are plenty of downsides.
I know. And that's what disappointed me. He has, I think, over 40 starts in his college career. It wasn't like he was just came on late. He had extra years. And then that's why I was so disappointed in the polish. I thought he would just be like a real quick, smart operator. And I was like, man, you've started 40-something games and you act like this is your first year starting sometimes. And that's why I kept kind of, you know, holding off. I ended up with an early third round grade on him. And that's where I'd be comfortable taking it. I mean, the half round inflation, middle second, and that's where I'd be comfortable taking him. And that's really where I'm at with him because, yes, I keep saying it, creation and accuracy, but it's just a lot of that operating from the pocket and skittish footwork and all that is a really worrisome to see from an older quarterback prospect.
Why is Kenny Pickett a potentially a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins?
He can create
a little bit, right?
Yep.
He can throw on the run.
Yep.
But that, like, Kirk Cousins is 6'3", 210, right?
Yep.
When Kirk Cousins is pointed in the right direction, it looks pretty fucking good.
It looks great. Yeah.
And that's when I was watching him, that's what I was thinking. It's like, that's what it reminds me of. When everything's moving in the right direction and his decision making is defined and you're giving him something, it can look really good. Mm. And there is more creation to his game. But that was the name that kept creeping up to me. Kirk Cousins is a fourth round pick.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's so scary. If this guy came out of a normal class and you took him to third, you'd be like, okay, that's fine. That makes sense. But if you're talking himself into pick 18.
Six.
That cannot be overstated enough is Matt Rhule, knowing Kenny Pickett very well. And the owner of the Panthers is a Pitt alum.
I also think that there's a level of urgency and desperation there that drives decision making.
And
in this
desperation leads to guys like Kenny Pickett going sixth overall. That's really where we'll leave it at.
All right, let's play this out though. If you were a team, I kind of laid out my case. If you were trying to talk yourself into Kenny Pickett, how would you start?
It's like you say, when you get pointed in a direction, he can whip in and operate. If we have a good team around him, it's like maybe this guy can come in, he can handle NFL verbiage, he can go in and it won't be as big of a jump as maybe some of these other guys. But also it's the processing afterwards will be a whole nother story. But he can come in and at least look like he can do enough. And if stuff breaks down, if he can't get to number two, at least he's a good enough athlete with good enough size. He can do stuff after that. And we'll get him more polished and more comfortable in the pocket once he realizes that he's with an NFL offensive line. And I think that's how you can talk yourself into them.
Best case scenario for Kenny Pickett as an NFL quarterback.
Oh man, I think above average starter is best case with him. I just
like the 13th best quarterback in the league, the 10th.
Yeah, 13th. Kind of, okay. Or the Jimmy G range. The Jimmy G, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr's better than that.
It's the level of Kirks. He can be one of the Kirk levels. Is what we're talking about with
Absolutely
Kenny Pickett.
Absolutely, he is. He's on that. What was the book series? Not the Animorphs or whatever. You know, he's one of those. He's somewhere in the middle of that.
All right, let's get to our next guy here, Malik Willis. This is an entirely different experience. Okay. So you're writing up Malik Willis. What does your scouting report look like?
Big arm, big legs. That's that is what you're looking at with Malik Willis. But great athlete, very good athlete. He bursts,
really
quickness,
strong. Like, as a runner, like a running back. I mean, he is built. It's not just speed. It is strength. I mean, and also creation as a runner. Where Ritter is not as twitchy. Like if he's getting moved in a straight line, you like it. Willis's ability to make guys miss in the pocket. I mean, he had a jump cut in the Syracuse game where he made a guy miss and like literally like running back jump cut to make a huge play on the ground. I think it was their first drive.
Oh, you'll see him do juke to spin moves.
Yeah.
It's like, yes. It's spicy. But the build matters too. He's thickly built. That's always good for durability sense, operating in the pocket sense. He can make plays happen out of structure, not just with his legs. He throws better on the move, but he can throw off platform, adjust his arm. He's competitive. He's tough. His teammates really feed off him. You can tell when he scrambles, you can see the whole sideline going nuts. I also want to say that about Pickett too, is that you can tell his teammates like him because he does a big play and all of a sudden his teammates are going, yeah, Kenny, I'm like, yeah, yeah. Like, and it's like, okay, you always want to see that. I know it's corny.
Yeah, of course. You want the teammates to go to the guy's birthday party. It's an important thing.
It does, right? But, you know, and he throws a beautiful deep ball. Willis does. Throws a beautiful, beautiful deep ball with probably the best deep ball arm strength in this class. Like, probably a tier or two above anybody else.
So they do two plays all the time. Okay. Yes. The amount of double move out and ups they ran is truly insane.
Like stop routes and double moves off stop routes.
So many out and ups. Like every single game they ran set a ton of them. And then the other, if we're talking about deep ball accuracy and just deep ball acumen, they ran a ton of out from the number two, a vertical from number one, and he's hitting the whole shot.
Whole shot, yep.
Those are some of the best throws he had consistently was that whole shot up the left sideline. And it looks really good
because
he's got a ton of arm to do it. So continue. But that's like that's what I noticed. In their tape all the time, you have those two things coming up every single game.
And it's God, can I just start getting into the negatives so I can like that?
All right, so lay it on me. Lay it on me.
Because, I mean, the kid, he seems great. Like everything.
People love him. They have nothing but good things to say about him.
Nothing but good things. I mean, everybody. So it's pretty, but it seems pretty cool with a lot of these guys. I haven't really gotten any like, oh, he's a shitbird about any of these guys, which is always good to hear. You want to hear that because it's the future. It really is. If one of these guys hit, you want a good figures in the league. But anyways, you say they run those two concepts all the time. It's because that passing, their passing game is so elementary. It is JV level as far as difficulty, as complexity. And I don't want to sound super mean, but I got to be honest when you're evaluating these guys. And that's what you have to ask yourself. Is that because of Malik or is that because of Hugh Freeze and the offense that they run? And that's where interviews are huge with these guys and going, can you handle this? Or is that where they trying to like keep the training wheels on you? And so they ran all those stop routes and outside stuff. And that's what Malik is. The one thing is he's thick built, but he's under 6'1". He was 6'3" That matters. I think the Baker Mayfield number one selection made us forget that like short quarterbacks, it's not balls getting batted down. It's reading throws in between the hashes. And this is Russell. This is Baker. We can talk about it all over and over, but Malik Willis has that same issue where anything in between the hashes, he can't see.
Well, they eliminated that by never throwing the ball between the hashes.
Just stop routes and out routes. I know. Keep everything outside. And I mean, again, is that because of him or is that because of what they want to run? He's really inconsistent on his timing, his anticipation. He has to see the receivers come open. He doesn't anticipate throwing. He has a big arm, but at the NFL, a lot of quarterbacks have big arms. And guess what? Those freaking corners you go against, they don't care. They're going to break on your throw and pick it off.
Three games, I never saw him make a throw before a guy got out of his break one time.
Ever. I the best routes he throws are stop routes on the outside, and he's still late on them. And you know they run him a bunch because it's all they run.
And that's when you watch Ritter, and like the ball's out. Like the ball is out before guys are even out of their breaks. And that happens consistently. With Pickett, it doesn't happen as often. Some of like the outs and comebacks are on time. But it's not like Ritter where consistently the ball is out before you even want it to be.
Which is what you want. Because the NFL, we used to talk about NFL. People think NFL windows is just throwing it into a tight hole. And NFL windows, the timing. If I throw this 1 second late, Jalen Ramsey is breaking on this and he's early. He's waiting for the interception before he takes it to the house. So he's erratic in his pocket movements. He took the most sacks in the FBS last year. He works backwards in the pocket, which is
and
a no-no.
Sideways. He drifts in the pocket unnecessarily a
bad.
Lot.
Yes, and that's scary.
To his left a lot. That's what I noticed. He would drift to his left pretty consistently.
He's trying to see. And he, a lot of guys get the Madden drop, I call it, when you pull back on the joystick. It's because he's trying to see over the offensive line. And in the NFL, those edges will just keep looping. They'll just keep looping around. So if you work back, that's where you get strip sacks that happen. Yes, he has a big build. He can create a little bit, but you wish he could create more from the pocket and be a real more polished passer. So that's really the negatives is that not only just being in the offense, but also reading defenses. The first play against Ole Miss is probably one of the worst coaches for Willis. It's because he has a guy wide open. If he just throws in structure, he can throw a little curl route. Instead, he's late. It either gets batted down or picked or something bad. Or no, he takes a sack. First play, he takes a sack because then he's guessing where the next route's going to be. So it's just
eat sack on first play. Slow to get his eyes back to his right. The curl was there. Is my notes from the first play of the Ole Miss game.
I'm trying to remember from December 20th or wherever I watched that game. But that's
really funny.
Yeah, and that's what he does. And that's in college against Ole Miss. Now imagine the NFL.
Ole Miss game was rough. It was rough because he threw a couple picks. that were predetermined throws. He thought he had one of those whole shots up the right sideline. The cover two safety was sitting on it the entire time. It was an easy interception. Then he took a truly horrendous sack. It was third down. They were on the 12-yard line in the first quarter, and they were in trips to the right. They ran a little slice route across the formation. The guy was wide open, and he just didn't throw it.
Yep.
I mean, there's some of those available throws that he just doesn't make. It's like, oh man, it's hard to know what he's seeing in that moment.
Yeah,
that's why I think if we're going to talk yourself into him, it starts with the physical traits. But like you mentioned, he by most, like all accounts, is a smart guy.
Yeah.
So if there is a processing level there, that if it's a different offense, that he can have more on his plate, that would be how I would talk myself into him, is that this is what he was asked to do in college in this specific way. If we asked him to do more, if we put more on him, he can handle it. Plus, you have the traits. Yep. When I'm looking at teams and I'm looking at situations with him, if he ended up in Pittsburgh and he didn't have to start for a year, or he ended up in Washington and he didn't have to start for a year, and he could truly just sit on the bench for an entire year with a team. Like, I think Scott Turner is a good offensive coach. If he ended up with somebody like that and got to learn for a year, that would be the best case scenario for me. Of this group, I can talk myself into him because of the tools.
Yes.
Because his upside, I do believe, is higher than any of these other guys, even if that upside feels far away when you watch him play.
Yes. When I wrote him up, I said he's going to be a huge project, but a fun project. Because it's like you said, he has to sit. He has to. And it's not just terms and verbiage and breaking the huddle and all that stuff. He's going to get thrown against NFL defenses. They're going to eat him alive. It's just you can't win this way. And I know I'm being harsh right now, but this is day one. He needs to sit and just get adjusted to that and really realize what's happening week in, get used to game planning week in, week out. But he has that upside. We're talking about star, starter, bench, bust. He has more star potential than anyone, but his starter might be the same exact percentage. He might have a 10% star, 10% starter, and then like 50% bust. Like, you know, that might be what he is, but that's the home run swing you're trying to take. We talk about getting a bucket a million effing times on this show. He's the guy that can get it more than anyone. And where you could see him in a game, taking over a game in the fourth quarter, scrambling for a first down, throwing the launch ball, and you're just like, oh, wow, he won them that game. That's the appeal of him. But I think it's just going to take time in the right situation. And I'm just scared if a team overdrafts him and, hey, your day one starter, it might be some growing pains for him and the franchise.
It feels like most places he would potentially land, most places any of these guys would potentially land, they wouldn't have to start right away. There wouldn't be urgency for them to start with. Even Seattle, right? If they don't bring in a veteran and Drew Locke is there, the nice part about Seattle is I don't think that Pete Carroll's on the hot seat.
Yeah.
I don't think John Schneider's on the hot seat. I don't think you trade Russell Wilson. It's like, all right, we have to win right away. So I don't think there's a huge amount of urgency to play a quarterback that they were to draft this year. Mm-hmm. And everyone else has a bridge option. Everyone. Even if Atlanta drafted him, Mariota's there for a reason. Trubisky's in Pittsburgh. Like, I think every team has put themselves in a spot where they don't need one of these guys to play right away, except for Carolina. I think Carolina, there is urgency for whoever they pick to go play right away. And I think that's what leads them to pick it. That if I'm trying to connect the dots, that's why I'm doing it. But with Willis, that's what I would say. I was talking to a play caller at the combine, and what he said to me essentially was, why would I swing for the middle? You know, and that's a coach talking. And there's a reason that coaches aren't the ones picking these players.
Yes.
But I think that is the allure of him, is that in a class without a lot of star power, he potentially has it.
Yes. And it's so funny how people talk about Willis is how you usually hear coaches talking about like a toolsy left tackle or edge rusher. Oh, just wait until I coach him up. Like just wait till I get my hands on. Cause there's so many guys get overdrafted because they get the freaking D line coach saying, oh, wait till I get my hands on him. He's going to have 12 sacks. And then they come in. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly what the player was at college, that, you know, it's a can or won't thing. So that's what's funny hearing, talking to coaches and scouts and just even as I'm watching them, it's like, it sounds like you're talking about some toolsy dancing bear left tackle, not a quarterback that you might have as your franchise guy. So it's interesting. He's a unique prospect. He's a fun player. It's I want him to go in the right situation because I want to see him succeed because he could be such a fun player. And my pro comparison for him, by the way, is Tyrod Taylor because that's where it was like where I went with him because he's best on the move and he has that bigger arm. Tyrod has an underrated arm strength because especially throwing deep.
What's the best case scenario?
Oh man, super Tyrod. I mean, shit. Like, you get a Pro Bowl guy that can win you a game. Like, I mean, week in, week out, take over games when he has to. And all that character stuff comes to fruition where he gets into a system that eases him into it. And it's like, oh man, they let him do what he's good at. But it might be year two, three, four before he gets there. That's best case is a legit Pro Bowl, win you a game every week type of guy. That's his upside.
For me, it feels like a version of what Kyler is, where he's stronger and bigger. So, and that's a nice part about it. But the arm is such that like they have similar arm talent if channeled in the right way.
Yes, if channeled in the right way is going to put it. It's like freaking Cyclops from X-Men. Just give him some glasses so he doesn't kill somebody.
I want to be very clear before we move on. When I say like he's the one I would roll the dice on, I'm talking at like 28.
Yeah.
I want to be very clear about this. If the Lions pick him at two, this is not the type of bet I'm talking about.
No, I'm 1,000% with you. He ended up my QB2. I have a late second, early third on him. And that's like where Jalen Hurts went, like, you know, where Derek Carr went, where Kaepernick went. Like, I'd take him in that kind of range, not like you said, top 10, because that's a hell of a home run swing to take.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
All right, Sam Howell from North Carolina. You're writing up Sam Howell. What does the scouting report look like?
Man, there's a beautiful, beautiful deep ball. Very catchable deep ball. Big, thick runner.
He uncorked one against Georgia Southern this year.
It's gorgeous.
That was like 62 yards in the air, and it was just on a dime. I was like, holy shit.
He gets the arc on it. It must be just something being short. Maybe that's what it is, because he's 6 foot, and maybe that's like when I was playing with Russell Wilson in college, I would just be enamored with his deep balls. I mean, I think we all are. When he throws those moon shots, Kyler does the same thing. Maybe it's being short. They can get that extra little leverage. Like, they can get that extra couple degrees of the angle where they can get it high. But, man, he throws a beautiful deep ball. When he's in rhythm, he can get some accuracy, which can help, like, have some good accuracy flashes it, where let's create some yards after the catch. Really good. I mean, I'd say a really good runner, but a good, strong runner, tough runner. He's an okay athlete. I'd say above average athlete, nothing to write home about, but he's tough and thick built. I know you're going to laugh about that, but it's, I'm trying to say all the good things. These are all my strengths with him. He seems like, you know, another good character kid, which also helps as well. And I think his teammates like him as well, which it does matter. I know we're going to laugh about all that, but that shit does matter.
It does. It absolutely matters.
It does.
Especially at that possession. Think about what Jim Irsay has been saying about Carson Wentz all week.
Yes.
That shit does matter.
Yes. Or what's happened to Baker in Cleveland. Or, I mean, that stuff really, you have to be such a special player at quarterback to be an asshole. Like, that's, they'll tolerate you. It's a sliding scale. So if you're not going to be a true, true star, you better be a good guy too. You better be a good hang. But that's my positives for him, is beautiful deep ball, good build, tough player, and can run around a little bit. I wouldn't say he can create as a thrower, but he can create as a runner a little bit just because of his build.
His arm is pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond even the deep ball, he gets a lot of RPMs on that ball. His arm talent and arm strength, I think I would put him probably behind Willis and the conversation with Pickett as a guy that's only 6 foot. I was impressed with his arm consistently. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some downsides, but I was impressed with the way that he could throw the ball.
Yes. Can I get to negatives time?
I'm ready for it.
Already mentioned he's 6 feet. He's 6 feet and a quarter. That shit does matter. That's where the Baker comparisons come from, because
there's a lot more. There are more than that. It's beyond the size.
It's funny though. I mean, they do look alike and run and throw like it's so much. He has a really long over the top throwing motion, which he has to because of his height.
Yep.
And if he's late, defenders punish it over and over. You can see him breaking because it takes that extra second. It's not Byron Leftwich, but it does have that longer over the top. He played in a super heavy RPO system. RPO is like 80% of the snaps. So his ability to process as a true dropback stuff, reading over the middle of the field, which is to come up with the height. You can see him he lacks anticipation. He's another guy that waits for receivers to flash open anytime he does have to go 1-2, because he's guessing a little bit because he's not comfortable just sitting in the pocket and moving around, finding 1-2. He'll look to tuck and run the ball too early.
It's infuriating. And that's where the Baker stuff comes up to me, where he believes that he's a playmaker that he physically is not.
Yeah.
And I mean, you watch a game, that Virginia Tech game from this year. I mean, he's just trying to take off every single time. It's one and done, one and done, one and done. And I just don't think he's a good enough athlete to warrant that approach to the game. I think it, especially in the league, it shows up immediately as a huge negative if he continues to try to play like that.
Absolutely. That's why you get worrisome with these guys and just with any quarterback, not even just with Howell, is if you're going to be a one and done guy, you got to be a plus athlete coming out of college. And then you're hoping once you get to the NFL, you're in the pocket becomes better. You can get to 1-2-3. You can make some plays. That's why sometimes you get these guys that come in as a spot starter with injury and they're like, holy crap, look at this guy run. John Wolford a couple of years ago. Oh my God, look at this guy run around
Heineke
a little bit.
Again, right?
Yeah, Heineke. Yes, that Heineke is like the perfect synopsis of this. Run around, make some plays, accurate enough, okay. But as the season goes along and more film gets on him and he's a little smaller, it just wears. It's like a hitter in baseball. Once pitchers start to learn what you are, they're like, okay, he can't hit a changeup. Changeup, changeup, changeup. That's what defenses do to you. They go, we can just run cover two because this guy doesn't check it down once. He's going to keep trying to throw these shots outside and scramble, and we can just bait him. Or we're going to run a looping D-line pattern that's going to take advantage of him trying to build a pocket. They get smarter. These coaches and defenses get paid too. So that's why I make it a little worrisome, or he's a little bit worrisome as a prospect. It's just because of his ability to operate from the pocket.
The stat, we talk about the stat in relation to NFL quarterbacks all the time. The percentage of your pressures that turn into sacks.
Yeah.
30.8% for him, according to PFF, which is the seventh highest mark in the entire country last year.
That's scary.
And when you watch him, it feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely feels like that, where he's running himself into more trouble than is necessary. And he's just not the athlete to overcome that style of play or that level of decision making.
Yeah.
But if you were a team trying to talk yourselves into him, how would you do it?
Yeah, it's another guy that if a team has patience for a project where they're saying, hey, let's try and hone in how he operates from the pocket and kind of channel that good arm strength that he has, that is best case. That is what you would what you would want to do. He has to take time to operate though, like or to learn how to operate. Like he is a project as well, along with Willis. Like I really do think Howell is more of a project than people realize. But I think is why you do it is like at start as a high end backup and then maybe grow into a starter's role. I compared him to Jalen Hurts, and I actually feel pretty good about that. Just his play styles. Can't throw in between the hashes, has to throw outside. Big tough runner as far as a super twitchy. Hurts is a little better runner.
But he's a much better athlete.
Throws a beautiful deep ball.
So much of Jalen Hurts' ability to survive is because he's a plus runner. This guy is not a plus runner.
That's the the Animorphs. That's the scale of what we're talking about with him. But that's how you talk yourself into him, is that just how they did with Jalen Hurts is okay, maybe he can go create some plays and maybe there is some room to grow. And Hurts maybe hasn't done that, but that's what you're hoping for with Sam Howell.
I think if I was talking myself into it, like best case scenario, he ends up being like Baker Mayfield, like some shade of Baker Mayfield where the decision making improves. And when he's in an NFL offense, he can actually handle it. Yeah. He's not even as accurate as Baker Mayfield.
Nope.
Like for a quarterback like him, where he's not a great athlete, he's not very big, he's got a decent arm. You want him to be more accurate than he is, especially over the middle of the field. Like there's a lot that you have to talk yourself into with him.
Yes. And that's why I have a late third, early fourth grade on him, not a first round grade. And yeah, that's exactly it. You've nailed it on the head a few times when you just say how do you win? Like what is your tool? What is your trait? And how that's what you keep guessing. You're like, okay, well, there's a great deep ball. Okay. What about every other play when he's not throwing a deep ball? Okay, and he's not a good enough athlete to create, so he has to win from the pocket. And he has shown no consistency from being able to operate from the pocket or in a dropback scheme. So that there's a lot of hesitations with him.
That Russell Wilson without the athleticism thing you say about Baker, I think applies to this as well, when you're trying to project him moving forward. I have a similar feel when I watch him, so I completely understand that. All right, last guy here, Matt Corral from Ole Miss. You're giving me your scouting report on Matt Corral. What does it read? Does it just say RPO in big letters?
I was just gonna say, if I ran a lot of RPOs, I love this guy. You know, he is tough and competitive. I do like that. He is a pretty good athlete. You can get to the edge on designed runs. Quick twitch player. I think that's the best way to put it. Like he's just quick twitch as far as like snaps off the throws and play fakes, and he has a quick, consistent release and throwing motion. I would say he's above average accuracy on short intermediate throws. You know, lets the receivers, catch the ball and create something after the catch. Above average arm strength, throwing tight spaces. I think some people think he has a good arm because he throws a beautiful spiral. So he has that kind of, he has great arm strength. And it's like, I don't know about that. He just throws a nice spiral. It's a little a misconception that it could happen. He's tough and competitive, even though he's not a big dude.
When you watch him, he looks skinny. Beyond even what he weighed in at, his frame is small. He looks skinny when you watch him play.
Yeah, and that's my number one negative with him is below average height, bulk, and build. And I wrote this before the bowl game, like this report, and I even said it'll make him susceptible to injury in the NFL, and he got injured in his bowl game. And I'm not like
he's been dinged up a couple different times,
a lot,
right?
Because he you appreciate how tough he is, like you do, like he's willing to take a hit. That's college. The NFL, you take three square shots at a .195 that he probably plays at, he's gonna like get hurt. Like it's inevitable. It's just physics. It just really is. He's a single read quarterback at this time, like point in time. That's the RPOs again, just like with Willis is that because of what they run or is what he can handle? I've seen Lane Kiffin offenses before. If the quarterback can handle it, he's willing to drop back and just do a normalish offense. He's leaned into RPOs lately. But that's just like probably because it's very telling. And Derek Klassen has brought this up is that
from Football Outsiders,
from Football Outsiders, friend of the pod, is that it will be a 3rd and 7 or 3rd and 6, a normal passing down. And they'll just run design runs like QB runs with him rather than have him drop back and throw the ball. That is a red alert. That is like, and Lane Kiffin probably has plenty of third down plays. So the fact that they'd rather just, we'll just run a draw or we'll just run a QB sweep, something of that sort in the high red zone or in a 3rd and something, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7, that's a little scary. It's about what he can handle when he's operating from the pocket.
I am not a quarterback scout. I don't have a level of expertise in the area. This is a challenge for me no matter what. I truly don't know how you would watch his tape and be able to evaluate him as a potential NFL quarterback on so many different levels. They ran play action on more than 60% of his dropbacks, according to Pro Football Focus. 6-0. That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, that is truly insane. And when you watch them play, I mean, he can run that offense very well. I mean, him as a point guard of an RPO offense, mm-hmm. the ball's out quick. You know, he looks like a shortstop. I mean, the ball is out quick. He can put it on guys. I mean, that it makes sense, like, that he was successful doing that. But it is just such a far cry from what you'd be asked to do in any sort of NFL offense. We talk about Tua and like that offense and mm-hmm. how weird it is compared to other teams. They were at 40%.
Yeah.
So crank up that offense by 50%, by half, and that's what Ole Miss was doing last year.
Yeah, and unless he gets dropped into like the 2017 Eagles, there's not a lot of like teams that can win that way. It's going to cap yourself. The only dropback they run consistently would be 2x2 four verts. And I would see people going, man, look at Corral looking off the safety and hitting the seam route. And it's like, well, one, that's the only dropback concept they run. Two, every quarterback since junior of high school has been taught to do that. 2x2 four verts. If you're throwing the right seam, I'm looking left to move the safety, and then I'm throwing the right seam. So it's nothing any crazy, and it's the only one they run. And that's all you can like take, like copy and paste to the NFL. You're like, okay, what else can you do? Are there any other eyes, anything of that sort? I think he's more of an intriguing backup. And with athleticism, some accuracy, I compared him to Tyler Huntley. I felt just like, hey, go in there, make some plays, go run around a little bit, and oh, hopefully don't get hurt when you take another shot. Like, that's really what it is. But there's just a lot of red alerts that when you watch him that crop up when I watch him.
All right, though, if you were a team trying to talk mm-hmm. yourselves into Matt Corral, what would it look like? What would it sound like?
Just like that Tyler Huntley. But no, it'd be you take him. Hey, we'll get him up to speed. We'll get him going in an NFL offense. Get used to these terms, get used to huddling. And then, okay, let's get him on the move. Let's get him throwing off platform. Let's get a lot of more nakeds and sprint outs and play action, just as we said, not just RPOs, but just true play action. And let's just let him get some confidence operating on true dropback stuff or true NFL level passing concepts. But I just, man. It's so hard to say all that. And it's best case is that he's competitive and he's going to fire up the teammates when he scrambles around a little bit and create some yards. So that's really the best case is he can go in there and make some plays for you with his legs and a couple of throws off platform. And hopefully we can build him to being like a starter, just being comfortable with an NFL offense. That's best case, though.
So you've done this already, but if you were ranking them, how would it go?
I have Ritter, Willis, Pickett. And then I actually have Corral and Howell with the same grade, but I went slightly with Corral. Just, I don't know. This was 3 months ago. but I have them with the same grade, but that's how I went. So I went Ritter, Willis, Pickett, Corral, Howell.
All right. Anything else that you feel like people should know about these guys? Any wrap up thoughts here?
I would say we got spoiled last year with the prospects from last year. Like, yeah. Those were four legit top 10 talents and Mac Jones, who was a good prospect in his own right. So I think when you watch these guys, I think that we have tried to talk yourselves into them, see what the best case is, but you have to have a level head that the likelihood of these guys hitting isn't high. They all might. Quarterbacks are so freaking hard. Of all these positions are coin flips. Quarterback feels like 1 in 4 that you're even somewhat correct on these guys. So I think just have level expectations with these guys, because the more that go in the first round, people are going to talk themselves into them, but a lot of them have warts. Even the guy that I like the best in Ritter, he has his warts as well. So I think just having a level head of how we view these guys compared to not even just last year's class, but a normal quarterback class.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that there's a good chance that one of these guys will become like a plus starter in the NFL. Like, at least one of them probably will. Yes. Very rarely do you have a quarterback class like the 2013 class, where EJ Manuel goes, I think, 17th overall, and Geno Smith goes in the second round, and none of them end up becoming long-term starters in the league. Yeah. There's a good chance at least one of them does. I just think that if you're looking at what it's going to cost to go get one and the likelihood of that happening, and like you mentioned, those bands of outcomes with starter, star, the star bands for most of these guys are so, so small or non-existent. And in a world where you're having to compete against the guys that we talk about all the time, should you spend a first-round pick on a quarterback that has very little to no chance of ever becoming a star?
And also just the opportunity cost of
exactly.
Now, this is our guy. And then next year you have the 12th pick and it's like, oh man, there's four guys we like as far as talking yourself into a guy this year. That's the scary part is, especially if you're in the freaking AFC, and you gotta look at all those, those warriors that every other team has. So that's the scary thing with these guys. And that's why it's kind of crazy that even guys I like that they're saying going in the top 10, because I think it's just, it might be a two step, you're taking a step forward, but really you're taking two steps back as a franchise.
With a team like Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
And let's say you like one of these guys. Let's say you really like Ridder and he's there at 20. I can understand, like, all right, we want to start our clock. Like, yep. This is, it makes sense. We want to start this. We want to get this guy in the building and get it going. But to take one just to take one.
Yeah.
If you're doing it to say, like, well, we need a young quarterback, like, let's do that. I just don't understand that thought process. And at least one, probably two or three teams are going to do that.
Yes.
In the first round. And I just think that it's misguided. I don't know where it's going to bring you in the end.
I do too. This class is going to be a test of patience for a lot of teams. And it's going to be fascinating.
I think those decisions are driven by so much more than we like this guy. It is all outside factors that really don't have anything to do with what these guys are probably as prospects.
Yep. And desperation leads to bad decisions. I'm just fascinated. I could see all these guys going in so many different spots. And that's what, not just quarterbacks, this entire draft class is really fun in the sense that there is no consensus. Like, really, there isn't a lot of the positions, too. So it's going to be really fun, but especially at the quarterback spot. And it'll probably give us some nice cannon fodder for years down the road about who picks who.
I cannot wait until four of them go in the top 12. It's going to be amazing. All right. I'm just kidding. I don't think that's actually going to happen. But if it did, it would be incredible. All right. That's all we got for today. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Please subscribe to The Athletic. We have a $1 a month promotion going right now. If you do not have an Athletic subscription, I highly recommend that you go get one right now. Very soon, you'll be able to check out Dane's draft guide, the beast that he has been working on ad nauseum for a very long time. That is an incredible accomplishment and feat this time of year. That is worth the price of your Athletic subscription all on its own. You can also follow all of the other coverage that we have going on right now. So if you do not have one, highly encourage you to go do that. We will be back next week. I'm not going to tell you guys what the show is going to be on next Tuesday. It's going to be a surprise on more than one level. Let's just say that. Excited about that. Enjoy your weekend in the meantime. I appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.